You are listening to The Tenets on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. To support us, visit patreon.com/ Kyle Dempster Studios. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of The Tenets. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined here by my co-host, as always, Stark Realm. Hello, Stark. How you doing on this wonderful Sunday afternoon?
Pretty good.
Good to hear, because we are going to talk about the Elsewhere embargo lift, because we talked about this a little bit before, but I went out to ZeniMax headquarters and got to play with the Necromancer class, got to play with the dragons, got to play with the cats. Just kidding, I don't play with cats. I'm the dog guy. But anyway, I did learn a lot of things. I just like to rub it in for all of our Khajiit fans. Listen, they're getting an entire entire map that's going to be all them, Stark, and they're going to love it to death is all I have to say. So I get to throw a little jab at them here and there, right?
Yeah, maybe. Probably. Until they find you with their claws.
Well, you know what? The bright news is Elsewhere is infested by dragons. So as far as I'm concerned, it's all barbecue as far as the eye can see. So
you're saying they've got even more cats, flying lizard cats that breathe fire?
Well, I can handle the lizard ones. That's fine. Those are surf and turf, Stark. Surf and turf. We've talked about this with you guys before, that Elsewhere is bringing a lot of new things into the game in terms of we're getting a Necromancer class with it, which is crazy cool. We have not had a class added since the Warden, which is prior to my time in the game. That came in with Morrowind. So, what, 27?
Yeah, 2017.
Okay.
Yeah, was it? Yeah.
My brain always says 16, but 18.
No, it's 17 because 2016 would have been Dark Brotherhood and Thieves Guild.
Good. But I don't know why my brain says 16, but you're right. It's 17. And so people have been asking, like, what did we get with Somerset? Well, that brought in jewelry crafting and such like that, and the Psijic Order quest line. So this time around, we are getting a wonderful zone full of cats. I think they're going to absolutely love it, Stark. It is a cat lover's dream. I'm surprised hairballs are not floating around like what are those? What floats down the highway? What are those called?
Tumbleweeds.
Tumbleweeds. Thank you. I had a total brain fart. We're going to have cat hair tumbleweeds as far as the eye can see. It's a very deserty land.
Yeah.
I wasn't prepared for that. My brain kept saying more jungle because there is a part of Elsewhere that's supposed to be jungly, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe further south than...
Well, yeah, there's up along the Cyrodiil, the border with Cyrodiil, it starts to get into jungle. And then also, you've got some savanna over in Reaper's March, because that's actually part of Elsewhere as
right.
well. So there is some of that. But mostly it's desert. And that's something that was kicking around in Skyrim. You even get the lines like, you know, warm sands and all that.
That's true, huh? I guess I didn't equate so much of that because I was a little bit... That's the part that I'm not going to lie. I didn't love that part of the zone myself. But there are some other beautiful areas further south in the zone that are much more my cup of tea. And I actually didn't get to see all the stuff that they were showing off the other day at the Bethesda Game Days PAX East. They showed off some zones. I think they had like Wheeler navigating through some of them and showing off some cool stuff. And that was very cool. It looks like stuff I definitely want to explore. So I need to get in there for real more than, you know, like 3 days of quick time. I need to actually get my hands dirty, taking on some quests.
Well, this is something about, it's actually really hard to explain if you've never done this. When you're getting into these testing events and you've got this very compressed time scale. So it's like, you'll sit there and you'll have, you're saying you've got 3 days. That's not true. Mm-mm. You've got realistically about 6 hours to examine the game and examine the map and explore. And that's also going to be split up with, you're going to be meeting with people, you're going to be interacting, you're going to be giving feedback. So it's not like, it's really cool and it's an amazing experience, but you don't actually have as much time as it sounds to just go in there and sort of soak in the environment. I wouldn't train it for anything, but yeah, it's worth understanding. Like when you see this, it's just, it's a first glance.
Yeah, it's very, that's a great way to put it. Cause even the schedule we had to work off of, I went and I asked the question, I was like, do we get to roll a necromancer day one? And they're like, of course you can. Why are you asking? And I was like, well, the schedule says explore elsewhere. And so what happens is we all get in there and everyone rolls necromancers day one. And almost no one explores elsewhere to like the true degree that I think they wanted us to do elsewhere. Cause we're all like, ooh, new spells. New weapons, not weapons, but new abilities and passives and stuff. So I'm like, oh, and I should say, what weapons and stuff do work with my class? Like, what's, do I want to do this set or that set? And so we were so distracted, I feel like. But on the bright side, we got into content and it was really, really good. We were able to, as a group, go, I entered a public dungeon. Jeremy told me to get my butt into one of those. And it was very cool. It's actually the same one we got to see a preview of the other day. The one that has kind of like loops around it and stuff.
Yeah, the Rimmon Necropolis.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was very cool. I enjoyed that. There was a cool quest in there. I only got a little bit into it, but very, very full of necromancers. It was great. I guess I should say, if you haven't already figured it out by now, this episode will have very light spoilers because there's really no way for me to thoroughly spoil anything. I did none of the questing in a serious sense. We did play through the tutorial, which I don't think we probably have listed here in the notes, so I might as well bring it up now and say the new tutorial is very good. I think a lot of people are going to be very happy with that. It definitely forces players to do mechanics, which is something that the other ones have been a little bit lackluster on. This one makes you actually do them three times over.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's like when they say heavy attack, they mean heavy attack three times till you really get it into your brain. So that might help some newer players out there, anyone that's considering getting into the game, if you're listening to this episode and you're already elsewhere in your hands, that's a good tutorial for you guys. I guess I should also call this out too, because I was told and I didn't see it myself, but there is a staff in the starting area in the tutorial. So if you're looking for a staff, it exists. Just throwing that out there. I couldn't find it, but it's in there. So I guess every weapon type is in those, but I'm a derp and never collect them.
Well, that's kind of a history thing too, because when the game originally launched and you're in the Cold Harbor Escape, mm-hmm. there used to be a situation where you'd have a table full of weapons and you could just pick what you wanted. At some point that was changed and it was, you automatically picked up the two-hander and that sort of become the de facto, okay, this is your first weapon in the game. Same thing happens in the Vardenfell tutorial and same thing happens in the Somerset tutorial. But in both of those, and also actually in the Wailing Prison, if you start without any DLC and any of the additional content, you can find the other stuff as you go. So if you keep your eyes open, you can find everything. I think the one exception is the only Destro staff you can find is Inferno. I don't think you can find Lightning or Frost Staves.
Fair.
In the opening areas. But other than that, yeah. But yeah, you do actually kind of have to poke around looking for those when you're doing the tutorials now. Whether or not this is an improvement in the game overall, I don't know. It's a personal taste thing. It does take that moment of indecision away from the player, though. It's not like you walk up and you're left with all of these weapons and it's like, well, which one do I choose? It just straight up here. Take this weapon. Let's explain how you equip it and how you use it without having to worry about, is this the kind of weapon I want to use? And then as you're playing, you can naturally find the others and screw around with them.
Right, right, right. No, that makes sense. Especially in a historical context, it really does. So if anyone out there is searching, look for that. You actually encounter, the tutorial is a good one. Let me just put it that way. You'll have a lot of fun with that. Anything you want to add, and I've told Stark this beforehand, but if you want to ask anything, please just poke in and do that. Stark, ask any questions. And for anyone that's out there, if you want to learn something that I haven't said or won't say in this episode, feel free to come over to the Twitch channel and ask that. We've been talking about this in detail. Like I said, NDA lifted. So almost, and a lot of this content is out there, so we can happily show you anything you want to know. One of the things I see here is free housing, Stark. So this is a system that we've seen before, and I got to preview this. So again, this should all be good to go. And talking about, we get another inn in Rimmon. And it's about the size of the Alanor Inn, so it's a nice, spacious one. And then there is also supposed to be a 700-item cap house that will unlock and become free to you through a quest. So I believe, and I, again, did not quest through it, but from what I saw, you are able to complete this, I think it's part of the primary quest chain. And You do that, you unlock the house. Now, the coolest thing about it, and I think that this could lead into some really cool housing stuff in the future, and I was kind of poking them with this idea, since we see the tech, is that the house actually has different rooms that open to you, different wings, I should say, of it that open to you throughout... blank, throughout the Season of the Dragon, throughout the Elsewhere quest. I don't know for certain that portion of it, and that all might be still subject to change in its own way, but from what we were lightly told, like, that will open up to the player over time. So actually, you start with a room and it's very spacious, but you actually get more space from it as you go along. So there's two additional wings, one of them being a really cool balcony area, and I can't remember, I think the other one's like a temple area. So it's really cool. It's all in Khajiit-y style. You guys have seen the Khajiit-y style from a lot of the trailers and gameplay footage there. It's that kind of like, I don't know if it's East Asian, but it's
supposed to be Southeast Asian.
Southeast Asian, aesthetic. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's all that, like, the stone architecture. So if you, you know, you might very much like it if you like that.
Yeah. And from what I understand, the house, the large one, so you said you didn't see it yet, but from what I understand from the PAX presentations, it's not quite ready to go yet. Like, there's some elements of the tech that aren't actually implemented in the test builds yet. So something Rich said, and I'm not 100% sure what's going on there, is he mentioned portals. So I'm not sure if it's actually going to open up, like, the, you know, there's a wall that'll suddenly be gone and you'll be able to, you know, expand out into this whole wing, or if it's like there's going to be a portal and you step out into some Daedric plane or something.
Oh,
either one of those would be really cool.
For the house one?
Mm-hmm.
They are portals. So okay. I believe it's like you, this is me stretching my brain out here. I think it's like you collect tablets or something like that, and then the tablet or something sits in this certain slot in your house, and then that allows you to click that slot and it teleports, kind of teleports, but it's, yeah, I mean, it's sending you to a different area, kind of. So I don't know, I think that's a really cool concept. If
it were
my creative decision here, I would use this baby for future Guildhall technology. Just saying, that's not something that we were, you know, that's no, I'm making that up. That's completely me. I'm just saying, if we're already playing with the technology of, like, hey, here's different wings, then the way I would see that implemented in the future is maybe you could add on different things to, say, a guild hall. I don't know.
Well, this is kind of a rabbit track, but I mean,
yeah,
you're not the first person to say we want guild halls in the
no.
game. Like, that's been a topic of conversation for a while.
I just think that this tech could be something that's maybe a stepping stone to that. But again, that's just strictly my opinion. I know nothing about that. So I would love to see that come to fruition. At the very least, see it become... you know, you don't want this implemented into every house, but I think it's really cool to, again, give extra free housing to players.
Yeah, and this is the first time I think a 700 has been given for free as part of the content, because we had the Summerfall event last year, which we talked about on the podcast, and that if you were logging in back then and you own Somerset, you got a 700 cap house on Artaeum. But I think this is the first time we're just going to be like, if you own this content, you run this content, you're going to get a large house.
Yeah.
Originally, the in-rooms, the basic in-rooms, were actually gated behind a sort of moderately lengthy quest, but that's been changed so that it's now just straight up, okay, you walk up and you get it for free, which is cool, but, you know, it's convenient for a new account, new player, but, yeah. I think this is the first time they're actually giving out one of the large houses. Just, here you go.
That's good, because those in-rooms are not really worth much, so I can't imagine doing, like, a massive quest to go ahead and get that.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason. I think there was a reason. A lot of people, especially anybody who was playing Dominion when housing was first added, were kind of like, what?
You mean their broom closet?
I thought it was just a storage closet. I didn't think you put brooms in there. There's not enough room.
There's not enough room for your brooms. Oh no. Yeah, it holds like one singular item. Sorry, 80 yeah, players. Get an Alanor in or an Elsewhere in.
Yeah. Or just get the one in Mournhold, not Mournhold, in Ebonheart, or the one in Daggerfall. Those are really nice.
Yeah, at least the Daggerfall one I really like. Can't picture the other, but yes. Two public dungeons coming with this. That's going to be very cool. Like I said, I got my butt into one of those dungeons, and I very much liked it. Didn't get to see the others, as you can imagine, Stark, as someone that's played with, like, a dev map before. At the time of us seeing it, and I'm sure this is one of the last things you add, but was the icons weren't there for everything. So it was a little bit hard. We were actually porting around most of to get into Dungeons. We're using dev commands for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of that stuff wasn't set up yet. And so therefore there are about six delves coming in with it. I think it is. Do we have confirmation at six, Stark?
I think that's what I saw when they had the, cause they actually had the zone guide open when they were doing the presentation. Oh, wow. So I think I saw six delves, which is standard. Like, if it's not that count, it'll be unusual. Normally, that's normal for the large zones.
Is Somerset not considered large?
Somerset is a large zone. No, it has six. Delves? Somerset has six.
I don't really think there's three.
No, there's six. It looks like there's seven on the map.
Really?
So if you check the zone guide, there are, for Somerset there are six. And then when you go and you actually look, one of them is Arnartea. And one of the ones on Somerset is labeled as, it's something or other pass. I can't remember the name. And it actually has two entrances, which is kind of unusual. So, yeah, that's an interesting zone for that.
I see exactly what you're talking about. Yep. You're right. There are totally. Yeah.
Six delves.
Yeah.
There's a couple that, for whatever reason, they do show up in the, I was going to say there's a couple that don't show up in the dailies, but now I'm thinking about it, they actually do. It's Hrothgar where some of the daily quests don't actually send you to delves. But yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. I my brain was only saying
it's okay.
Looking at the delves, I see why my brain's isolated them. Like you said, Arteum. Then you got that ocean one that takes you pretty much off the island. And then, yeah. But anyway, I'm beating the bush with the Somerset here. But like, yeah.
That's cool.
So, okay. Six, that sounds in reason. And did we have, while I've got that open, it looks like, okay, two public dungeons again came with Somerset. So we're getting two here. So that makes sense. Okay.
Should also be six world bosses. Cause again, that's like, it's a full size zone, right? Like this is the same, roughly the same size as Arteum, as Vardenfell, and as Hrothgar. So it should have 18 sky shards if that matters to you. Like it should be on the same rough template, but some of the elements have been changed. And so one of those, we'll come back to it in a second, is actually the incursions are back. We had those in the base game. Then we had them in Somerset. We did not have them in Morrowind, and that was actually kind of a point of issue. So we got the dark geysers in Morrowind, but in Somerset. Ugh, derp.
You're fine.
I will keep making that mistake. Yeah. I mean, there's no stopping me.
I heard you say Arteum instead of Somerset, and I wasn't going to stop.
Yeah. That's cool. But yeah, so those are back. And then, of course, the incursions for elsewhere are going to be a little different and really cool. So we'll get into that when we get to that.
Yeah, I am very freaking excited. You guys, this is going to be a very fun zone, even for a guy that doesn't love Khajiit. Stuff. I know that I can say that left, right, and center that I don't like that. I'm not madly in love with the zone because I'm not madly in love with the Khajiit lore, but it nailed it to a T. Like Khajiit lovers, people that are interested in that stuff, or people that are just even, you know, moderately okay with all of the races, you're really going to like this zone. Like it is going to be so up your alley. I need to get into some of the weirder elements of it. Like I said, like there are some really, if you're starting out into this and you find, and they may have changed this by the time it goes live, I found that where we launched into Elsewhere to be a little bit boring, that zone, and that was feedback I gave. It just was very deserty, and I'm like, but I don't see enough structures and landmarks here. Like when I go around Somerset, I feel like, bam, there's something there, and it like strikes me. I didn't see that here, and everyone was like, you need to go further south, and I just, again, like you said, due to time limitations, weren't there as much.
Well, and this is, again, like in this testing environment, you can also drive the developers nuts they want you to look at something. And if it's, even when it's properly signposted and you look at it afterwards and you're like, oh yeah, no, I see you actually designed the map, so I should be looking in this direction. For whatever reason, in the moment with all the strange little distractions, you don't.
Right.
And like the sort of, you know, point of example of this, when they dropped me loose on Somerset, you know, like the exact same situation you're talking about, where it's like you can look around, you can see all this stuff. I was completely disoriented.
Right.
And so I basically just started doing an exterior collision test on the zone, just wandering around looking for stuff. So like that was driving them crazy when I was there. But yeah, no, it's absolutely a thing. It's a strange situation.
Yeah.
Really cool, but strange situation, especially your first year there. And as a result, you do not get an accurate feel for it in some respects. So
let me also say, these devs are the most amazing people you'll meet. Like, we've, Stark has said that on the show before, having met them, and we've talked about, you know, hanging out with, but seriously, being in the same room with these guys is incredible. And it's just funny because here we are day one and I don't know people yet. Like, Jeremy's walking around, mm-hmm. Jeremy Sarah's there looking, you know, over the zone stuff as we explore. And because I hadn't had a conversation with him yet, I'm like, in my own mind, I'm like, I feel very under the gun to be doing, like you said, like, yeah. You know, I've got that observer bias in a way. And he's like, don't worry about it. Do whatever you want to do. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like, this is too much freedom for me. Like, I would be in a dungeon right now. If this were my stream. So, and that's when he's like, well, you get to let me port you to a public dungeon. I'm like, great. This is my element. I got this now.
See, the first thing Jeremy did to me was sent me to the Griffins and killed me.
He's a great guy. They are all so freaking wonderful. If you guys think that they're funny on their live streams, let me just say, being in a room with them all day is like the best way to spend 8 hours or whatever.
That's absolutely fantastic.
Let's talk about this necro. And if you, like I said, again, if you have a question or whatever you want to pull back to, Stark, let me know. But next in our list here is the necromancer. And I went into this with high expectations. Like, I really did. For those out there listening, you know me. I've been talking about it on stream. I went into this class having the Diablo 2 necromancer kind of in mind, but still knowing it wasn't going to be a pet class. And let me say, they have nailed what a necromancer is in a game. Like, they have a necromancer. This is not a Nightblade plus a Sork. This is not, you know, any combination of the two. Nightblades are not dead. Like, none of that conversation you read on the forums is true or anything like that. Like, I saw that in chat the other day. I'm like, no, you're wrong. I played it. I'm right. Sorry. I'm pulling that card. But, you know, it's no. This is a real full-fledged class with mechanics we've not seen before, is where you really...
And to be fair, the X class is dead is almost a meme at this point in the community, because like every major release, we've gotten this. When the Warden dropped, it was like, oh my God, the Templar is dead.
That's what I heard.
And it's like, no. And then Somerset dropped, and I forget what it was that was supposed to be dead with Somerset, but it was like, no, they're still here. We've been getting this basically with every release going back to launch. You've seen some of this. You've seen some of this with Merkmire even, where it was, you know, like several builds are now completely dead. And it's like, it's not just the classes are dead. It's like, you know, this whole swath of the game is dead. And it's like, no. Oh, that's right. Sorks were supposedly dead again with Merkmire because of the shield changes. And it's like, no, because I was here when you said that Sorks were dead with the Imperial City, with Hrothgar. Like, no, they're still fine. They're still here. So yeah, this doesn't just eradicate previous classes, and any balance changes that are coming aren't going to completely eradicate classes.
Not at all. So let's see. Overall class overview and themes here. Kind of reading through our show notes to keep myself on track, because I'm getting into that mode where I could just gush about this forever. What do I want to talk about next? Corpse management for it?
Yeah, that seems to be the big thing about it, is the managing corpses.
Okay, so many of your spells are going to work like normal spells. So you've got things like the spammable, and I'm going to speak to DPS. Well, I'll speak to Magicka, DPS, and Magicka heals, because that's what I did. I had a character for each of those. And the spammable for the Magicka DPS feels much like the spammable for a Warden. It's something you throw. It actually feels much cooler, though, because it's got like a bounce effect, and it's nice. So you got some very basic spells that you can rely on. But then there is a lot of stuff with this class that is going to feel very different when it comes to corpses, because we don't have a body management thing in the game other than maybe the Templar's thing where he sucks the life out of bodies. Is that's a Templar thing,
right? Templars have repentance, and then you have werewolves. Those are the only two that need to worry about corpses right now.
You know, and werewolfy people may have a leg up on that a little bit more than Templars, actually, because one of the things of feedback I gave them, and I really hope they move forward with this, is some spells, two in particular, they're both tethers. You've probably seen some of these spells by now. But there are two tether spells that I find a little bit tricky to manage, because you actually have to be looking at the corpse to target it. And as a healer or people that are in PvP, it's going to take you a lot of focus to do both. So this is one of the first classes that you're actually going to have to retrain yourself on a mechanic, or I should say initially learn a mechanic. Whereas I think right now, you know, you can go between Templar, Warden, Sorcerer, you know, keep naming them, and you're fine. These are all the same. They play the same way. Sure, the spells are a little bit different, but mechanically they're not. This is a different mechanic.
Yeah, because there is an element of that with the existing classes where, and you'll see this when you try to switch from one class to another, that there are some significant mechanical changes, but they're not upfront in your face like this. One of the biggest ones, actually, for the current lineup of the game is the Dragon Knight, because when you're trying to play a Dragon Knight DPS or even as a tank, you do have Battle Roar, which means your entire focus is to generate ultimate and then detonate it as frequently as possible to get resources back. And for most classes, there's nothing like that. There's no relevant comparison. Similarly, like with DKs, the entire structure is you put DOTs on things and just leave them there. And so you don't need a conventional spammable in the same way.
Right.
And when you're looking at a different class, you're looking at like a Nightblade, you're looking at a Templar, you need spam. You need something you can use regularly while you keep your other stuff up.
Yep.
And that's absolutely untrue with the DK simply because of the way it works. So there are these elements already in the game. And I could go on about this with all five classes, but there are elements like this in the game where one class will play very differently from another on mechanics, but those mechanics aren't front-loaded like this, where it's like, okay, there's a bunch of stuff that synergizes with finding, targeting, and hitting a corpse. The only thing in the game that has primed you for that at all would right now have been a werewolf, where you had to go find the corpses to keep your transform going.
I think that idea of finding corpses is something I didn't enjoy. And keep in mind, I went into this, and I'm way more pleasantly surprised than I thought, because I was actually kind of nervous about the corpse management before I got there. I was worried, like, what if I love this class visually but can't stand him mechanically? Like, that was a concern of mine prior to even getting to the studio. But I've got to say that there were only two of those spells that felt a little wonky, and I really hope they take the feedback, and I've actually created new feedback that I should probably send over, though it's we're getting late in the cycle. But I think the trick is most of your corpse spells will use an AoE target. So, for example, you guys probably in some B-roll footage. Let me try and figure out. Do I sew the page up with the notes of the spell name? Oh no! Give me a second, Stark. Let me see if I can find it, because I want to. So you guys, you're already grasping at straws for what I'm talking about. So I might as well try and get you the right information. What's this? Life or death? Release residual fallen souls healing you. Okay, so this is it. It's called Life Amid Death, I believe is the name of it, and it is in the Living Death Tree. It is a healing spell that will cast a ground lay, and when you put it down, it will heal you and your allies for X amount of health. If there's a corpse there, it will consume it and continue to heal you and your allies for X amount of seconds. It's like 5 seconds per corpse it eats up or something. So that's a great example of an AoE ground lay, right? And you guys have seen like the tombstone or the graveyard one that's out there too. It's a ground lay. If there's a corpse in the vicinity of the ground lay, it will become stronger. I think that those other spells, the tether, should use the same mechanic, that it should just be an AoE. It should not function like an AoE, but it should target any corpses in the AoE area. That way you don't actually have to hit your thing with the cursor.
And that's actually the one difference with the two that do go with corpses right now. Because on the werewolf, your corpse interaction is a synergy. So you're chowing down. So that means if you're in roughly the right position, you'll get the click and you'll actually go into it that way. So you don't actually have to aim normally. You just have to be in the right position.
Interesting.
And the other thing is with repentance, it doesn't care. It's just going to grab every corpse in radius, which can be a little frustrating if you're playing a Stamplar right now, because you need to get, if you want to manage corpses, which corpses you're eating, that's almost impossible.
You know, and it's going to be a problem. Like, I do think you're going to have some groups that almost want to min-max themselves in terms of, like, who they're bringing. Like, I don't know at first glance if a Stamplar will be great to bring with a Necromancer.
I actually do have the answer for that, and it's a little complicated. Yeah, because this is... So a couple of changes that came through. One of them was... It was either Murkmire or it was Wrathstone, or Witch, unfortunately. There was a change to the way Repentance worked and the way Werewolf Feeding worked, so that in both cases, they would no longer be competitive. Because before that, like when you joined the game, Stamplars were competitive with one another for their repentance.
Okay.
If you repented off a corpse, nobody else could.
Got it.
And that got changed so that you don't, when you consume corpses, you're only consuming them for you. The same thing happened for werewolves because, again, used to be like if you had a werewolf and somebody else was running repentance, they were your worst enemy. They would eat all your corpses. So with the necromancer, at least as it was described during previous pre-release discussions, the corpses you generate as a necromancer from your pet abilities can be repented and can be consumed.
Oh, okay.
So not only is it entirely viable to bring a necromancer with a Stamplar, it's actually advantageous for the Stamplar or for somebody who's running a werewolf because you're putting food out there for them.
True. That actually would... Okay, I that clicked together when you said...
Now, I haven't tested it. I haven't seen this actually work. I've only got Rich's discussion on it back in January. So if that changed somewhere along the line, I'm unaware of it. But at least the way it was explained originally, that was actually, it's a boon for those two.
I am excited to actually get this guy in again, more content, because we played it in such limited group content that it's a little bit hard to say definitively. And again, for people listening, you know, all this stuff is due to change by the time that we get our hands on it in May. Again, I think when it comes to corpses and targeting, I think it's very unfair on those two tether spells that they have to actually be pointed at the corpse, where, like you just said, the other two in the game don't need to be, where most of our spells are just AoE ground lays and they'll use whatever's in the ground.
The other thing about, I don't know if this is true for you, the other thing that's true for werewolves is any edible corpse will actually be marked by a red flag. Like it's kind of faint. I don't know if you've actually played your werewolf much, but there is actually a sort of little vertical red column. It's fairly faint, but you can see it once you know, look for it. That'll indicate, oh, hey, you can eat that.
Column, you say?
I might actually have screenshots of it somewhere.
Well, so here's
I can
the
certainly,
problem. So
you can certainly show it to you on live after we're done with this.
You're talking about the problem, and that is that the necromancer uses some of the most beautiful spell animations I've ever seen. It is everything that I want in a class, really, truly, and at least in aesthetics for a second. However, your corpses have the same great teal colored effect that all your other spells do. So when you're running a party of four necromancers, which I guarantee almost all of you will be on May 20th, whether you want to or not, you are not going to notice what that little indicator. And now we said that. Now, one of the things I would like to see, and we asked for it, is if that could be changed, just like we can change the color of the ground AoEs. It is not a big column. I think you guys saw it on screen the other day at the Bethesda Days thing, where it's this little... God, I'm trying to think what it would actually be. It would be like 1 foot off the ground if this were IRL stuff. You know, it's this tiny little like spike on the ground and it's like a teal color. And we said, guys, it, you know, you got all these beautiful, huge splash animations. Keep in mind that when you are empowering your spells, so like I mentioned that ground lay for the heal. Well, it gets brighter when it consumes a corpse to tell you, hey, you actually ate a corpse. So problem being, you know, you've got all these gorgeous effects going off. I can't see bodies, and especially not when we're running Vet Mazatoon and doing that, you know, with people that not everyone in the group knew this stuff. And I myself was rusty on mechanics. So it was a great test of like the necromancer in an unfamiliar combat situation. I'm just like, whoa, I'm just throwing heals regardless of the corpses being there or not. The ones I have to actually have to target are hard, but I don't mean this to scare anybody. This class is so good. What I am trying to say, though, and I've been telling people this privately, is pay attention to the corpse management. If you get invited to this PTS and you get on there, I want you to tell ZeniMax how you feel about the corpse management, because if you think that it's hard, you say, I'm really struggling with corpse mechanics because I can't insert whatever here. I can't see them. It's not bright enough. It's not whatever enough it is. Or, guys, this should be an AoE trigger for these tethers. Whatever you think the thing should be, if you get in there, please send that feedback, because this is stuff that they are willing to look at and change. And we pretty much as a room unanimously gave that feedback of like, look, this plays great. However, you know, here's two hiccups. Now, I don't even want to dwell on the corpse mechanic unless you have more questions. Like, do you want to draw any more information out of that? Because I could talk for hours.
No, I think that's pretty much the big thing there. The next thing also kind of digs into that too, placement. Like, I was seeing this again when Wheeler was playing on stream yesterday, but you probably have a lot more input on this. It looks like it's a lot more placement sensitive for where you're standing and where you're moving.
Huh, that's a great point. Now, so full disclosure that one of the biggest disadvantages to us playing this class the way we did is that you're insta-boosted to max level, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's the worst way. That was a good refresher of me why people should never rush to endgame. And you should instead take your time and pick up all the skills, because when you have whatever amount of skill points that they give you automatically and you're slotting things in there, I didn't understand my passives that well. I didn't, there was just so many things I didn't jive, right? So placement for me is a little bit hard to talk about because I know I wasn't placing myself correctly. I mean, as a healer, I'm standing at the very back of the group trying to get everyone in my spells. But you are right that you want to have, like, there's some spells like names, Kyle. Is it Empower here? Let me see. It should be right here. That's the siphon. Scrolling down. It is calling, it's called Grave Grasp. Skeletal claws come out of the ground, snaring enemies and inflicting minor maim. So that's a good one. It's in there, the tanking tree, actually. But if you hit your allies, it empowers them for 5 seconds. And you hit your skeletal minions, it increases, enhances their effectiveness by X amount for 5 seconds. So there's a good reason to actually, you know, have some serious placement set up for your necromancer in that way. In terms of using some of these ground lays, you know, you are going to want to make sure that there's bodies around a boss. So whatever that means for you. So if you're a healer and you're in the back, you're probably going to be wanting to use blast bone skeletons that are running up there. I will say, I should definitely note this. I think a lot of us were running out of it, and I think a lot of it was because we were all scared, like a new player will be. The tether that does the healing around your feet as a necromancer, they all have a unique color. It's all this like teal thing, or it was a green aura, I can't remember. So just trying to say it's friendly, but I noticed that even a lot of seasoned players were running out of it. And I'm like, come back to me. I'm trying to AoE heal you by, you know. And so that is, placement is important.
Yeah. I'm trying to help you by summoning corpses. Hold still.
Yeah, hold still. I'm draining the soul for you. Sorry about that.
Well, there was also
family.
There was also the comment from Mike Finn at the event yesterday where he was talking about, apparently with your team. Yeah, they let him talk. Wow. Apparently with your team, you guys were actually coordinating where to die.
Was that my team?
I think so.
I don't know. I don't remember that, but well, I'll take credit for it and say, yeah, we can't miss the elephant in the room. That is the very powerful game changing battle res that the necromancer gets. Now, I'm very happy to hear that they have an update and they're looking into an update that the battle res will not be instantaneous, that you may come back as a ghost instead, because let's recap what this does. It is an ultimate for your under the healing tree that will allow you to resurrect three dead party members or trial member group, whatever. They don't even have to be in your party, let's be honest. In Cyrodiil, they can probably be, you know, anyone that's on your side. Yep. It will resurrect three as long as they're in an AoE vicinity of one another. And I think it's the standard, like, 12 meters or something like that. So, you know, it's a serious distance. If you're spread all around a boss room, that's not going to help you. But if you do die in a sensical way, it can be used for great benefit. It's something I could see tanks running more, because tanks are usually the last to die instead of a healer. But it should also be noted that, I mean, if your tank, your tank's probably going to want the necro alt, the one that's for tanking, that's going to turn you into the big skelly man. But this is going to take away from some of your potential DPS, right? Because you don't want to be popping this guy, or you don't want to be popping other things and then have your group die and then be like, crap, I just used my ulti. I could have saved them all.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Well, and this is actually something you do see with warden tanks a lot. You'll see them run trees, yeah, and Sleet Storm. Or is it Sleet Storm? It's one of the morphs anyway, the one that grants protection. So they'll run the tank ult and they'll run the healing ult, because sometimes as the tank, you need to help the healer out. So you might actually see that same combination going here, where it's, you've got tanks that are running the Bone Colossus transform and then also running the Resurrect on their back bar.
You know, it is possible, depending on... listen, I'm not a min-max or not an expert here, but I mean, if you're doing the Nord because they get the extra alt gen, right? If you are a good enough, if you're a good tank and can survive your party dying and you being the last one, and you're right, if you've got the Bone Colossus on one bar, you just use them, you got half your alt back, but your party dies. If you're willing to regen that alt mid-fight and it's not going to screw you up timing-wise, you know, some fights have that kind of like, if we don't get you up in 2 seconds, we're done. But if this is one of those fights that they can generate that alt just by kind of almost, you know, just taking some punches to the face, that would be a serious changer there. Now, the question is, you know, you're gonna want to be running with groups that know to die in one spot.
Mm-hmm.
So theoretically, you could pop them all up at once, though. I mean, that was insane in PvP to see that. Like, I loved it. People were howling because I would come in and, you know, and like two or three of my group members would die. And I'd be like, because I was already dead, right? I don't live. So I'm like, getting there and they're dying. I'm like, well, get on your feet. And then they'd be up. But I will tell you, I really hope it comes with a ghost form, because it was actually, if anyone's worried this spell's overpowered, as it currently is, I would argue it's not, because people aren't prepared for it. Like, you now, I understand they're not sitting in the comfort of their own home. There's devs around. Everyone wants to chit chat and laugh and stuff too. But no one was ready for that insta-res, which had a very negative effect to it, because what it meant is I would be like, Zynode, you're up. Like, go, man. Here's my thing. And I would start yelling it before I threw it down, right? I'm like, Katie, I'm gonna, you're up. And because I'd want them to know, because otherwise all of our natural reaction in PvP, we know about the timer, right? So we all go like, oh, I got 10 seconds to res. So everyone looks away.
Yeah.
And then they're like, crap, I'm already halfway dying again. No. And I'm not, you know, that's not a knock against any of the names I mentioned. I mean, if this is all natural, we're not used to a mechanic like this. We're kind of like kicking back for a 16-second res or whatever. The other thing is insta-death in the trial that we went through because of the battle res the wrong time. You know, we don't know the mechanics. I don't know when fire's coming. I don't know what's happening next. So I might as well just res them. I have no idea what half the spells on my bar even do at this point in the playthrough. And so I'm throwing this out, resing them, and then whack. And I'm like, crap. Sorry. Sorry, I'm really into this and very distracted.
No, it's cool. It's cool. And to be fair, I did the same thing with the Psijic. Like, I screwed around with the entire, this is going to sound insane right now, I screwed around with the entire skill bar with the Psijic when we didn't know what any of this stuff did. So it's like, and then I tried to fight something and I'm like, oh yeah, almost none of this is combat based.
Yep.
Whoopsies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's absolutely a thing that happens when you're jumping into testing environments like this. And it's something that does happen on PTS too. You can jump in on PTS with something you're unfamiliar with and you just instantly load at your bar, and then you're like, wait, what is this stuff? And also a problem if somebody power levels, where they're just going to get they'll get powered level to 50 and they've got the full bar of stuff, and then they're like, what do these buttons do?
True.
So this is not a knock against you. I've experienced this firsthand. It's absolutely fine.
Now, I'm looking at our time, Stark. We're already at like 45 minutes into this.
Yeah, we are.
Do we just want to wrap up Necromancy this week and then come back and talk even more in depth with dragons and Sunspire and stuff next week? Because I feel like we won't be doing it justice.
Yeah, that's probably true. I think we should probably do want to cover the justice interactions, though, because that's a
Yeah. That's part of Necromancy. I see you have a comment about stamina theme.
Oh, yeah. That was something that came up yesterday on the live stream. So this was something that was there by the time you got there. But apparently when the first wave of testers, the ones that were from the class rep program, were there, they didn't see this. This is something that's actually been a problem with the game for quite some time. Like, yes. Going back to like when the stam morphs were first introduced, a lot of times what we see in the game is you'll have a skill that will morph, right? Mm-hmm. And one morph will be stam and one morph will be magicka. The magicka morph will do something new and different. The stamina morph, more often than not, will not. It will be the base ability, except it's been converted to stamina. Ooh. And so now it crits on your weapon crit, it scales on weapon power and your max stam, and that's kind of it. Like, sometimes it'll swap over too, so you'll have something that'll be like, it'll switch from boosting max magic to max stamina, or restoring max restoring stam instead of restoring magicka. Sometimes it'll do something a little bit more significant, but for the most part, a lot of the stam morphs are just, it's the base ability, but now it's useful for stam character. And what I've been told is that that's not true anymore with the Necromancer.
So I did not play Stam, as you can imagine, but I heard a lot of positive feedback about it, and their spell sounded very different than my own. So that's a very good thing. I think also something that should be said is Casual Ranger talking on our stream. Again, he was there, and he was talking on the stream and said, I feel like this is one of the first classes that actually, I think it was him that said this. I'm going to put words in his mouth, if not, and I'm okay with that. I think he said this is one of the first classes that really easily feels like you do not need to be tied to a weapon. And especially for Stam, that's a very big departure because really, are there actual Stam classes in the game or is everyone just dual blades? You know, like, is everyone just dual daggers and that's what their class is? Because it feels like that. You know, you look at many of these Stam builds and they all use the same skills. And I'm generalizing, right? You guys out there.
No, you're not generalizing. This is kind of the only the only exception. This is probably because I was talking to Zyno the other day, but the only exception I can think of with this is the DK, where you've got a lot of stuff that straight up replaces your weapons. But no, for stuff like a Nightblade versus a Stam, you know, Stamblade versus Stamsork versus Stamplar, and even with a Warden, like, there is a lot of stuff that comes out of your weapon lines. I can't tell you how many characters I have right now where their back bar, the first slot on it is Poison Injection. Uh-huh. The third one is Endless Hail. And in a lot of cases, the middle one's Acid, the second one's Acid Spray because I'm weird. But no, seriously, like, that's it. Like, they're always there. So
I think
you're not wrong.
Might be a move away from that. And I didn't play it, so I don't want to die on that, you know, battle because it wasn't my thing. But I think that's true, and I think that definitely felt true for the Magicka side of it. I really wanted, as a healer, a Magicka healer, I found myself being like, do I really need to even take these resto spells? Like, combat prayer. I was like, I should. Kyle, the good, the healer in you that has been trained and honed, unfortunately, kind of the small portion of me that's a meta healer, the small one, I felt like I should try and put them on my bar, but at the same time, there were so many other skills that may kind of work better. And I definitely think you're going to get very interesting trial makeups out of these necromancers. Four person group, you know, you're going to need your necromancer throwing down probably combat prayer. But when you take your healer necromancer into a trial, that's probably not going to be your job because you have other better spells to run. So food for thought. Same goes for Healing Springs. Their own AoE that they have, the one that consumes corpses, is I again don't want to die on this because I'm not a min-maxer, but it seems better than Healing Springs as it was seen when we saw it.
Yeah, so. But more difficult to run from what I've seen. Like, you have to actually be more aware of where you're putting it.
Well, keep in mind these skills are not all but the tethers, to my recollection, all but the tethers can be cast without a corpse being there. So not entirely, like, you know what I mean? You can actually throw it down and it would be fine if it didn't trigger a corpse. If it triggers a corpse, it's a bonus.
Okay, cool.
So like what it would be if you know the morph, if you remember off the top of your head, Healing Springs morph, it would be akin to throwing down the Healing Springs without, I guess, the unmorphed version of Healing Springs. So it's like throwing down the base of it. But then if you hit a corpse, then it gets an extra effect. So, I mean, it's pretty on par with it. They've got a Breath of Life equivalent, which is kind of cool. It has a downside that applies main. But again, I'm back to healing spells and just talking through them, and you guys can see those. So, sorry. The Stam side, I didn't see, but I heard it was fun.
Cool. Yeah, and that's a major thing if they're starting to walk away from or walk towards the idea that you've got a lot of weapon independence going on.
If we were ever to see an insane class overhaul in this game, and here I'm not calling for this, but I'm saying if we were ever to see one, my interest in a class overhaul, large class overhaul for all of them, would be to focus on less reliance on weapon spells. Like, I just find it boring that everyone says run Wall of Elements. There's nothing wrong with Wall of Elements. I know people get really hurt. They really get butt hurt when I say that. Like, they're like, "Oh, my heart." It's,
you're not wrong. Like, the only time, the only time Wall of Elements is interesting, at least to me, is on the Ice Staff. And of course, you never ever want to take the Ice Staff in the most PVE. So that kind of sorts that out. But yeah, no, like, it's it's this ability. It's very useful. It's got fantastic utility for everyone on damage. And then that means you, if you're running mag, you always run it. And it's like, okay, well, I'm a little bored now. Oh, back to Stam. Yeah, that's different because it's, I'm going to be using these same abilities here too. So yeah, no, if they're moving away from weapon dependence for classes, that's going to be a fantastic change. And something we talked about off air before we started recording this, the idea that this is a game that if this is a game that's going to continue for a much longer period of time, like we're halfway in, like we're 5 years in. So it's already survived for quite a while as games go. But like if they're looking at, you know, what do they do for the next 10 years, then at some point, yeah, class overhaul is probably called for because there have been some significant changes and a lot of learning by the dev team on how to make a class work, even coming into this from the Warden.
Yeah.
So just in the last 2 years.
Like, I recognize that balancing is hard, and I had my own experience with my stream with balancing some things. I'm like, man, balance is really difficult when you start aligning different things. And to do a game of this size, you know, credit where credit is due. But it is true. I know the weapon system, the genericness of it is easy, and that's probably why a lot of it is the way it is. Like, some skills just don't stand out because they haven't found a way to make them. A case in point would be like, I think that spell with the Sigic line, the healing spell, is really cool, but it really doesn't have much real life applicability from what I've seen from other people's responses, and that's sad. I don't want it to die or not be used because it's just meh.
I think something else, like this is traveling way back in time. So like at launch, there was a system called soft caps. I think we've discussed this before, where you'd get to a certain threshold and you couldn't actually exceed that easily. Like, you'd get to a certain weapon damage, and if you tried to push your weapon damage further, your indicator would actually change to orange instead of white, and it would slow down growth on that significantly. So it's like you stacked into this resource, and this, you know, this stat, you now want to stack someplace else. And what that did, and this changed like 1.6. So we're talking a change in early 2015. Before that, you would see things where a player would actually spec into both Stam and Mag because you'd run a hybrid. And the original game design, when you're looking at the classes, because I mentioned earlier, the Stam, it's been an issue with the Stam morphs since they were added to the game. They weren't in the game at launch. There were no stamina morphs for class abilities at launch. So what would happen is if you wanted to have a character that was more Stam focused, you still had all of these class based spells. And there wasn't this idea of, okay, I'm going to run a pure Stam build, except I'm going to run weapons. And that change happened in the first year. So the game changed to the point where it was like, okay, well, now you can focus hard on Stam. And the game changed so that you could focus on, you know, make it into a single spec. And then with the champion point system added and the removal of soft caps and the stat realignment, then that's when we started getting the, you stack into one resource and only that resource and stack hard for DPS. And that was the death of the hybrids and the hybrid DPS, I should say. And so coming back to the game now, the last two classes, the Warden and the Necromancer, have both been designed with the idea that you're going to have a Stam character or you're going to have a Mag character. Whereas the base game never a consideration.
That's an interesting.
That was something that was retrofitted onto the classes later. So yeah, when we're looking at this and saying, okay, the Stam classes as they exist in the game today are like they're. If you're making a Stam build, you have a lot of weapon skills. A lot of that comes out of when you were making a character as the game was designed originally, your Stam skills would be all of your weapon skills and your fighter skill line.
Huh. Yeah. Okay. This is, wow. That kind of shapes my view on some of this differently. Like, knowing the history from it fills in some gaps there.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting. Like I like where they're going with this, and the idea, especially the other big change that's happened along the way, is the idea that every class should be able to do every role has also created a massive shift in the way the Warden and the Necromancer were designed. Because when you look at the other classes, they don't have that. Okay, you're going to tank with this class, you're going to heal with this class, or you're going to DPS with that class. That doesn't exist on the base four.
Interesting.
Because that wasn't there at launch.
Yeah.
the idea, like the sort of superficial approach of your Nightblade's going to be your stam DPS, your, yeah, and remember, it's going to hybrid, but
right,
that's going to be your stam DPS. Your Sorc is going to be primarily your mag DPS. They're your mage. Your DK is going to be your tank, and your Templar is going to be your cleric type healer.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that your preview on the main menu says that your Templar should be in heavy armor.
Oh, yeah.
Your Templar is supposed to be chunky and up there and in front and healing like a cleric in D&D or I guess in EverQuest. I didn't play it. Huh. It's like the idea was not going to be, oh, we're going to put them in light armor. That's, you know, your mage thing. Like the presentation of the class is, okay, you're going to heal in heavy armor. And to be fair, you can. You absolutely can still do that. It's just different. But yeah, so in looking at ESO today and looking at where it came from, there's not a problem with going back and saying at some point these classes need to be reevaluated for the game that it turned into, as opposed to the game that originally existed in 2014.
That's pretty cool. I mean, I just like hearing that kind of background for it, because that's that does shape why many of these things are the way they are. And I mean, I think it's very good that I want to slot all necromancer spells. Like I like that world, and I like that there's so many spells that I want to run at the same time and I can't. We had somebody come by the stream the other day and was like, only 10 spells in your bar, plus the two ultimates, but only 10 spells on your bar. This game doesn't allow for customization. I said, well,
my God,
I said, I think you misunderstand. And I didn't say it like this, but I basically was like, I don't think you understand what customization means. If you have every spell on your bar, like games like World of Warcraft let you have, you know, 25, 30 some spells, that's not customization. That's having everything. Like you have a buffet. We actually have to pick and choose. We're ordering off a menu. We are literally customizing like what we're doing. I want this, I want that, I want that. That's customization. And I think that we're kind of given, so you want a ton of juicy options is really what it comes down to.
Yeah, you do.
And again, Sam lacks that in all the other classes right now, for the most part. Like you said DK, and I respect that. But generally speaking, they lack those options.
Even then with DK, it's like you've got just enough.
Yeah.
You don't have, you never find yourself in the situation where it's like, I want to run this and I want to run this, unless you're actually specifically going out of class for something.
I'd be, you should poke someone like, I think maybe Zai ran a Stam one. I can't remember who all did, and see what they had to say about the Stam version. Cause I bet they, I bet Zai or Dots or someone had a really good run with it. And I'd be curious their input on the Stam side. All I know is hearing them all screaming about it, and it sounded like fun to me. So I may even try a Stam Necro someday, just because it doesn't, it's nothing to scoff at. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
Let's see.
So we've got one other really interesting thing about the necromancer. Yeah. And this is something else that's been in discussion. Like this has been on the forums and I guess on Reddit and everywhere else for years, which was, we had people asking, like I've participated in these threads going back at least to 2014 where they're like, we want to play necros. And it's like, you understand that's a crime, right? Well, guess what? It's a crime.
It's a crime. So as we saw on the screen yesterday, there is a tooltip showing which of your spells are naughty and therefore will get you in trouble with the guards. Now, I did get attacked by a woman, a dumb woman. I'm sorry. She was dumb in the sense that she was attacking me incorrectly. This wasn't set up correctly. She was attacking me while we were fighting a dragon. I mean, please, I'm trying to save you. And she's like, no, die, necromancer.
Living the Skyrim dream. You save the town from dragons, but you killed that chicken. So now you must die.
Exactly that. Now, again, that was a glitch. She's not supposed to do that in the real thing, but she was, her priority were way out of whack when she was smacking on me instead, and she's hitting the rest of the necromancers too. But I mean, it was funny because she'd go after certain ones of us, and I'm like, I'm stealing, lady, please. I know these are dead healing friends, but like, can I just save you from the dragon and then we talk? But so that's going to be a very interesting mechanic. First of all, in its most annoying sense, and I'm going to get this out of the way, yes, you're going to trigger ultimates in town. Yes, you're going to get in trouble for it. Yes, you're going to have a big bounty. Yes, this class actually may be geared towards, as Rich said in the original thing, this is probably geared towards more advanced players, this class, everything is going to be a little bit harder because of this system and other reasons like the corpse management. But this system is going to add a whole other layer of trickiness to it, because I don't know how good that mechanic is going to wind up being about, like, what people are okay with you summoning skeletal minions. So I believe you can throw skulls. So interesting. You can throw skulls at people, and that's not a crime. You can hit people with your scythe spell, and I don't think that's a crime either. So it's not like your first three spells, to my recollection, but it's the ones that have to do with raising the dead. So your minions, I think it's the ones that are like draining corpses as well, I think, are crimes. Some of this is coming from memory, so sorry if I screw one of these up, you guys. But those are the criminal acts. Your ultimates, I believe, are all, well, the bone colossus dude is definitely one.
Probably also the flesh colossus one.
Flesh colossus, definitely. I don't know about the mass res, but I do know that if you're someone like me and you accidentally hit your R key in town and trigger that, yeah, your bounties are gonna add up. I hate to say it. So actually, thinking ahead, Stark, you know, a character like this may actually be better off to get themselves through the Thieves Guild quest line, get some clemency sort of things. And I say that with no joke in mind. Like, that really might be a good money-saving tactic so that you can start to pay off these fines faster. Because,
you know, the other possibility goes back to exactly what they've designed the class so you don't have to do, which is grab some of the stuff out of your weapon line. No, 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 I'm not a necromancer. I'm just a normal mage who occasionally throws skulls at people for flavor.
I mean, that...
It's an interesting tension to have. It's an interesting tension to have if you're playing the game where you're, because you will be questing in civilized areas from time to time. And at that point, you're going to have to either be very careful about what you cast, or you're going to have to swap out some skills and try to pass yourself off as a more normal mage. And that's actually kind of cool, at least on a role playing front, of having to be careful about what abilities you unleash with.
It really is. And I believe that your count, your money count goes up based on your fine count goes up on how many skills you cast. Because Ninja, again, this is another woman that was on the path, and she saw him do this. And he was just out there like, you know, actually, I might have lied to you. I think the scythe ability might cause a crime to happen, because I remember looking over and I am watching him harass this lady. She's a traveling merchant. And she is just adding a fine to him every time he swipes at her with this thing. And he made it his mission. I think she saw him like hit a deer or something with his scythe and was like, criminal! And she's not a fighting NPC, so she's called him out for it. He's gave him his fine. And then he's harassing her, chasing her down the road, swiping at her with this thing. And she's just walking down the path. And she's just like, you necromancers! And just adding more fines to his thing. And so,
that's great.
It was hilarious. But it is, like you said, you know, you're sitting in the center of Alinor, no mobs around. You're like, okay, the only way I'm going to get in trouble is if I derp and press the wrong key. But then, like you said, Stark, if you are out in the world, if you're like questing around town, or if you've got a quest that makes baddies spawn in town, which we know those quests exist, if you hit the wrong thing and you're in eyesight of somebody or whatever the proximity mechanic is, you're going to get a fine on you and probably have those guards coming for you.
Yeah.
As this mechanic gets bigger, and I'm starting to transition in our show notes here that into the idea that people are requesting this to happen for vampires and werewolves, I personally, and I'm not saying this about anything but my personal taste, I want to see the guard mechanic change. Because if we're going to be able to trigger guards to come after us all the time, I don't know that guards should always be invincible.
Yeah, there's actually also some history there. Yeah. So this is
lay it on me, Stark.
And first thing is actually one of the most disappointing elements about it, because back the first time the justice system was added, because that was added with, I think, 1.5. When the justice system was first added to the game, one of the first things I did on the PTS as soon as it was there was I took one of my werewolves, went in the middle of Daggerfall and wolfed out. Was like, oh, the guards don't care. Immediately started killing civilians. The guards cared about that, to find out if they only cared about oils wolfed out, which no, they cared when I reverted to normal. This is literally like it had just come up. It had been up for like 2 hours and I was doing this stuff. It was disappointing that it wasn't that transform wasn't a justice reaction then. Now, The other thing about 1.5 with the guards, because before that, guards weren't invulnerable, but you couldn't target them. You couldn't interact with them hostily. That was supposed to be a stopgap. Guards were never supposed to remain invulnerable forever. There was supposed to be a PvP mechanic. So you would get a guild tabard. I forget when those were added originally, but you would get a guild tabard that was flagged by the system, like the actual game itself, as an enforcer. And you would wear these enforcer tabards, which at that point in the game's development, I think they applied over everything. I don't think costumes hid them. So you would wear this tabard and it would always be visible and other players could see this. And the goal was, and keep in mind, none of this ever even made it to the PTS. And if somebody else broke the law, they were flagged for PvP, and so were you. So you had a player guard system versus a player thieves system that was supposed to be implemented down the road somewhere.
Wow.
The last, I think they finally said that that system had been scrapped by the time Dark Brotherhood came out.
Got it.
Because I think I remember the issue was balance. So this is, and that's a real consideration.
Yeah. Like
if somebody grabs an apple by accident, remember,
right,
you can't, like, without add-ons, you can't protect yourself from accidentally picking up something in the environment. You're suddenly flagged for justice reactions. If somebody accidentally picked up an apple, then suddenly they flag themselves for PvP, and somebody else and another player can now just run them down and murder them. And that's not great for new players.
No, it's really not.
Like, that is actually a real problem for new players. So I fully understand why this system was put to bed, and especially back then, because back then this was before we had level scaling across the board. So it's like the idea that a new player would wander into Daggerfall or wander into Davin's Watch and would accidentally commit a theft and then suddenly be flagged. So a V14 or a V16 could just roll in and steamroll them.
Yeah.
Was very real. But there was this sort of stopgap thing of, okay, well, the guards will be immortal. The interesting thing when you play today with the guards staying like this is, once you get a handle on them, they're actually pretty easy to escape from.
Oh, yeah. I can't tell you the last time I died to a guard.
I can, and it was because I logged onto a character and they didn't have dodge roll keybound.
Oh.
So it was like, because I disabled it account wide, and then I'd forgotten to bind it on this character because I never log in on them. I got a bounty because I was doing, I think, Thieves Guild on them. And it was like, oh, well, shit, I can't get out of this. So they're just pounding on me very slowly. And it's like, oh, God.
Yeah. That
makes, and then they one shot me. But yeah, so that's like, once you've got some familiarity, and this goes back to aiming at a more experienced player, once you got some familiar with the guards, they're not that threatening. And I do think the other side of this is actually leads to an even bigger potential risk. If the guards are something you can kill pretty easily, it would be very easy for a newer player who's just good enough to deal with the guards to rack up an obscene, crippling bounty where they can't interact with normal NPCs.
But that actually already exists. And I'm glad you said that, because you can already do that in a basic way. And I want to say, I mean, this is a huge knock against the game. I should actually put this out there and say that I was a brand new player that we're talking my first or second day playing the game. Mm-hmm. And I want to say second, because I re-rolled right before like my next stream. Mm-hmm. And the character accidentally stole something in Morrowind, in your first little town. And I had no money. And the guards came after me. And I had to let that character die. And I actually just deleted him and re-rolled, because I thought,
you know,
it's easier for me to delete this character and re-roll him, because I'm just off of that slaver boat. Mm-hmm. I might as well re-roll the character, because then I don't have that bounty on my head that I got from like trying to escape the guard and I couldn't pay off the thing. So there is a faulty mechanism in there that probably shouldn't exist like that for brand new tunes. Again, I mean, how do you patch every hole? I don't know. And it's not the worst of the worst, but you're right.
You could probably deal with it. Like, that could probably be dealt with by simply having a global cap to the amount of gold a character can have as their bounty up to a certain threshold, or like, and just wipe that after like level 5 or level 10.
Yeah.
So it's like at level 1 or like, sorry, level 3, you're limited to like a 10 gold bounty or something. Like, that's probably possible. There's ways to exploit it, but nothing really too disruptive.
Because you think any player a little less dedicated than myself may have just been like,
oh yeah, no, could
done
absolutely.
With ESO. yeah. not going to play.
Absolutely. It's absolutely a risk.
And so
I can't say I've ever seen it, but it's the kind of thing where you wouldn't. You right. wouldn't actually see it. It would just happen and happen invisibly out in zone somewhere.
So then the question becomes, you know, if we're going to earmark vampirism and werewolf, being werewolf as a crime, the system as it's currently presented is very boring. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, the guards are yeah. not a challenge. All I'm going to have is this fine. I'm probably just going to end up shelling out a couple grand like every day when I accidentally mm-hmm. use a thing and, you know, they're really mad at me.
Yeah. And also in that range. Mm-hmm.
Unless this is, I mean, okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm theorizing a future. But I mean, that could be a way to draw some interest back to the what I consider to be the dying outlaw refuges that don't really serve much purpose in the game as they currently stand.
It's possible. It's also this is absolutely just us speculating. It's yeah. also possible they're planning to do more stuff with this system in the future, because like I said, this justice system we have today in the game uh-huh. was supposed to be a stopgap for further down. It was yeah. going to be, they were going to add a PvP system. That didn't happen. And for a lot of reasons, like a lot of very clear, coherent problems that were there that apparently couldn't be shaken out. But it's possible that when they're attaching justice reactions to player abilities, just mm-hmm. straight up, you use the ability and then that produces the reaction, that there's some additional plans for what they're going to do with that down the road. Because there were whole additional systems that were in the works originally. Mm-hmm. Like yeah. the, there were going to be outlaw hideouts, I think. I could be wrong. The maps that we got for Dark Brotherhood, for Thieves Guild heists and for Dark Brotherhood, I'm spacing on it, the dailies, the saying,
the
saying, oh, something.
The murders? Or what,
yeah, the murder, daily sacraments. Well, the sacraments. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Somehow I was getting an N in there and I was just completely losing it. But yeah, no, with the sacraments, it does remind me of the way these were described, where it was going to be like, these are these cave systems that are placed somewhere in the world and you sneak in, and they were supposed to be PvP also. So you'd have NPCs that you'd be fighting. Okay. And as the enforcers, you would go into these places, and outlaws would go into these places, like players who were had bounties would go into these places to do stuff. And then as enforcers, you would go into these refuges and try to grab stuff and try to make off with things. And so there was actually supposed to be a PvP system with maps like that, too, which is they were also describing that as part of the reason why there were these little hidden nooks and crannies in them that you'd have to fish around. Because if you're just engaging with the environment, okay, cool, but this is stuff you have to worry about. And to be fair, I don't know if those maps actually were planned for that, like if they were originally for that, or if they were created fresh for that content. And it was just that the team was remembering they'd also been working on towards designing these things.
Right.
But that sort of feel of, okay, here's this little den that you sneak into. It was really supposed to be a PvP environment set up. Sort of like these really tight quarters PvP that we didn't even see with the Imperial City.
Yeah. Well, I think an important thing to say to these people, the people listening, is Rich yesterday on stage said that the system will start with necromancy and we will evaluate it. And my chat went, oh no. And I said, listen, here's your alternative. The system hits live. There's a potential bug. I'm not saying we're going to have one, but there's a potential bug in what you're asking for, that we apply this justice system to everything right away, is that you may just get flagged on accident by walking into the city casting no spells. Like if there's one digit out of place, your werewolf, who is not flipping out into werewolf form, doesn't even have it on his bar, walks into town, he's just marked as a werewolf enemy. And that will suck because your character's effectively unplayable that day, or, you know, whatever. Yeah. So I said, the thing is, this is why people start small with this when you're developing something. You start small and then test the system out, because we might find it to be more taxing in a negative way than it is fun. You know, who knows? We just don't know. So that's why we start small. So anyone that's worried about it, don't worry. If you like it when it comes out with the Necromancer and it all plays smoothly, then great. Ask that we, you know, keep pushing that button, saying we want this to be hitting our vampires or werewolves. For vampirism, I'm going to say I advocate for it only to be active spells. I don't want them to chase my vamp level 4.
No, not the stage. Well, yeah, because you get into stage 4, especially for stealth characters, specifically because of the movement buff.
Yeah.
I think the active abilities on both, like the werewolf transform I don't even think the rest of the bar, just the transform is fine. Yep. And then also with the bat, with bat swarm, with mist form, and with essence drain, I think those four abilities being flagged would be a really nice change it works. Yeah. And best of all, because all four of those are tied to advanced systems that you're not even supposed to see until you're higher level, there's no risk of, oh, hey, we broke the game completely with this. So like that's sort of where I feel on those two, because those are the only two that I look at out of the entire tree and say, yeah, that should be illegal. I get the people that look at the Winged Twilight and they look at the Clan Fear and they're like, I just want to turn my stuff in.
Yeah.
And these things are blocking them. I understand where they're like, yeah, those should be illegal too. But that's actually kind of, as annoying as those guys are, getting rid of them is even more obnoxious.
Agreed.
So it's like, I fully understand the hatred there, but I don't think those are, I think those two are fine as is.
Can I throw
obviously some people,
a devil's advocate and say, I'm not advocating for this because it would be more bounty for myself, but how my Templar should not be allowed to accidentally Nova on top of a crafting station. I just accidentally killed like four innocent crafters, like theoretically, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, if you accidentally kill them though, you get credit for
okay,
that.
Okay. Like, so no, but there, yeah, there are other players, but theoretically I just assaulted four people with that spell.
Yeah, I know.
And so it does bring up, you know, so I just want to keep that in people's minds. Like, you know what? Yeah. You know, I want all these evil Daedric sort of things to be illegal. But, you know, if this is IRL for a split second, well, we have a lot of problems if this is IRL for a second.
Yeah, if this is IRL through what the
But if we're applying some
here.
Real logic to it for a sec, a lot of the spells we cast would be illegal in town. Pretty much the healing spells would be the only ones that wouldn't be. You go outside of that, you can't just shoot your bow down that corridor. Like, you just ended up shooting like four NPCs and they're all like mad. Like, you know, so it's a risk. It's a question of what all gets flagged. I mean, do we just leave it at vampirism and werewolves? I mean, that's fine. I want to see how it plays out with the necromancer and go from there. And by damn, I want some necromancer housing to come to this game. Too. So give me all the spooky shit.
Yeah.
I feel like yes.
Talking about bugs though, and this wasn't something I saw in testing in private. This is something that made it to the PTS. Yeah, and I couldn't have seen it in the private testing because of how it happened.
Yeah.
One example of, you know, like, well, it would, if somebody says like, whoa, bugs like this couldn't happen. Originally, if you had an existing character that had completed the quests in Shadowfen, it was impossible to complete the Sigic quest line.
Oh.
This didn't make it to live, but it was an issue on the PTS builds.
Wow.
What happens is there's a town in southern Mirkmire, or not southern Mirkmire, in southern Shadowfen, where
Skellies?
It's been taken over. Yeah, it's been taken over, and you have to go in and clear out the bandits or the Covenant or whoever's in there. And what happens is when you're done, the entire instance phases out and changes to a different instance. And so when you walk into town, then you've got villagers and it's all happy and normal. If you had done that quest and then you went into Shadowfen, I think I called Shadowfen Mirkmire at least once.
Oh, I don't know. I heard Shadowfen in my head, but go ahead.
If you go into Shadowfen, you go to this town and one of the rifts is in that town. If you'd completed the quest, the rift would phase out with the incomplete version.
Oh.
And there's no way to get to the incomplete phase once you finish the quest. So we're talking about this fear of, okay, what happens if a bug breaks the game? That can happen. And when you get into the PTS and when you're screwing around on the PTS, even when it's not, you know, a major launch push and you find a bug on the PTS, yeah, absolutely report that stuff, because that does happen. And that is something that, like, that's what it's there for. A lot of people, myself included, use the PTS as this kind of weird consequence-free playground to experiment with builds, to experiment with concepts, to flesh something out and see if it even looks decent, like on paper, before trying to do it on live. But the primary purpose of that is it is a testing environment and it is there to make sure stuff like this doesn't make it to live. I like the idea of vampires and werewolves being flagged for justice reactions because, again, these are both traditionally and historically crimes in the setting. But yeah, if something like that is on the PTS, you have the opportunity to absolutely test that. See if it works the way it's supposed to, because if it doesn't and it's going to break when it hits live, that's something that they need to know. Because there have been some pretty nasty bugs that have popped up on PTS where it's like they've gotten fixed, but they've gotten reported.
Right.
Like, there is a purpose to that environment beyond just, oh, hey, here's an early chance to take a look at some of this cool stuff that's coming. Because we all do that, too.
Right. I think that's kind of a great note to leave people on for this week. This changed our plans a little bit because we can't summarize dragons into this hour and 20-minute episode already, and we don't want to short sell any of this stuff. So what we might do, this is a huge call out to our listeners. We really haven't had this happen before, but if you have questions for anything that we've talked about or anything else that you want to ask about dragons and stuff upcoming, please send an email to Kyle Dempster Studios, same as the, you know, the name for all the stuff, at gmail.com. So just Kyle Dempster Studios at gmail.com. We will, I think that link is actually for you in the notes below, or whatever you're listening to this on. Please send any questions, because next week, looking at what we got, we're going to talk dragons and Sunspire and game changes. But I have a good feeling that, I mean, Stark and I could talk for ages, but I think we'll have room in that episode to definitely tackle some questions that you guys have. And I'm sure you've got something that someone hasn't answered somewhere. So send that over. I'll try and answer it if I've experienced it. If not, we'll give you our best speculation on what it will be, and we'll let you know that it's a speculation, so you're not just like, they said it. But we'll try to give you, you know, good guidance on what it would be, whether, you know, you're asking about a spell or whatever it is. Please ask away. Also, keep in touch with your devs. You know, they're very approachable people. So send that feedback in. Always be nice and respectful about it. I promise you, the respectful responses are the ones that get the real genuine answer. They get the real nice treatment. So let them know. You know, they're accessible on Twitter, the forums, things like that. Let them know if you have suggestions of any of these spells. You haven't seen them yet and played with them probably, so you know, it's a little bit harder. But ask. This is still in that phase of the development. You know, PTS is not here yet. What was our date for that? 15th?
Yeah, week of the 15th. So
that's, so it is the 31st. Yeah.
Yeah, it's 31st today. So it's going to be sometime around 2 weeks from now.
Correct. So if it hits the 15th, that means you get us next week. We're going to talk to you guys about, again, your questions. We'll talk to you about Embargo Recap Part 2, Dragons and such. And then the following one, it's actually, is that the one we have Zai slated for?
I think so.
Okay, Zai's going to come on for an episode. So Zai knows, is going to join us again. It looks like it's going to be the 14th of April. I actually need to talk to you, Stark, about time, because it is going to be a later in the evening sort of thing for us.
That's fine.
So Zai Node for that one, that's going to be really fun. I'm very excited. And he's going to talk to us about, this is timed specifically for new players, people getting into elsewhere, about how to improve your DPS out of the blue. Like, if you don't know, if you can't tell you're doing something wrong, you don't know whether you're qualified for vet content or not, he's going to give some pointers on that. We're going to talk again about, if you had experience where, you know, you've got a character, your CP is whatever level, but how do you know where you stand? Because there's a lot of fear about that from people. I don't know if I'm good enough. Well, we're going to talk about that so you guys can have a gauge in your mind. I think we leave everybody with that information. Send email questions for us about elsewhere. KyleDempsterStudios@gmail.com. If you want to ask questions live on stream, that's twitch.tv/KyleDempsterStudios. Stark's been hanging out there. We are over on Twitter. I'm at twitter.com/KyleDempsterStU. Stark, you're at twitter.com/MichaelJSchwartz. And there is a Discord link down there. If you're someone looking to find a guild, there's a link for that down there. That's been growing like crazy. We're going to get our very first guild trader, which reminds me, I need to leave this immediately and go bid on our guild trader, Stark. So until next week, everybody, enjoy your journeys across Tamriel, and you have a fantastic time. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Take care.